This is Time Signatures with Jim Irvin, a podcast and radio program presented by the Capital Area Blues Society in Lansing, Michigan. Most any contemporary musical style can trace its roots back to the blues. Time Signatures explores the blues and its musical connections with captivating interviews, lively discussions, and news from the world of the blues.
You know I'm crying, crying, baby, driving up in
And now, here he is, your host, Jim Irvin.
Well, hello there. Thank you so much, Parker. I'm your host, Jim Irvin, and this is Time Signatures. Oftentimes, you hear stories about things that develop out of necessity and circumstance, and how cool is it that we hear many of these stories coming out of the world of music? In the case of our guest, losing a long-standing gig with one of the blues' biggest names forced him to reconsider his path. And what developed is an absolute success story on many levels. And if you ask him directly, he'll tell you that this is just their take on the song-based electric blues they all love. To add some extra flavor to the mix, the band he formed has a very unique sound, blending old-school blues with a 50s and 60s flavor reminiscent of the likes of Paul Butterfield, Mike Bloomfield, and Peter Green, and even some of that early 70s twist a la Rory Gallagher. Considering who he worked for, it's not difficult to understand his passion for the signature sound of that era. Keeping it simple is the formula, according to our guest, and we're going to talk to him and his bandmates about all of this and much more. GA20 guitarist Matthew Stubbs, also guitarist and vocalist Cody Nielsen, and Josh Chiggins, who plays the drums. Welcome to all of you to Time Signatures. How are you?
Thanks for having us.
Very good.
It is a pleasure, guys. I got to tell you, man, when I was putting this interview together, the more I listened to your music, the more excited I got. And we're going to talk about some of the changes that took place over the last 12 to 18 months, a little bit later in the interview here. But I'd like to break the ice with each of you. And Matt, I got to start with you, man. Where did you get your start with music and at what age?
I was around 13 when I got my first guitar. I was introduced to guitar or blues or rock and roll from my father. My father's a guitarist. So grew up in a house with him having band practice, you know, a couple times a week, doing gigs on the weekends, and, you know, a restaurant or a bar I could get into, my parents would take me. Okay. So around 13, I got my first guitar.
Very cool. How about you, Cody?
Kind of similar story. I started picking around on a guitar when I was around 13. My parents are music lovers, so there was music always going on in the house. So it's I was taught from a young age what is cool. You know what I mean?
Right on. Josh?
My uncle played drums. He was in cover bands and some original bands, and he moved around the country a lot as a younger man, just kind of like chasing that type of stuff, whether it was for school or jobs or whatever. So he worked as a musician and left that lifestyle for, you know, the corporate world. But when I was little, you know, there was always like a drum set around somewhere, if it was my, you know, like in my parents' basement or over at his house or whatever. So I always just kind of like went to it from like a really early age. There's photos of me like 2 years old, you know, going face first into the snare drum, but so they couldn't keep me off of it. That was kind of, that's, you know, from as long as I can remember, I've always kind of played. I did not take it seriously though until I was around when these guys, you know, 13, 14 is when I was like, oh, this is actually what I want to do.
Okay. Now, Matt, you spent 16 years with Charlie Musselwhite as part of his touring band. Talk about how that opportunity came your way, would you please?
Sure. Yeah, actually, I'm still playing with Charlie, not full time, but, you know, here and there in between GA20 gigs.
Yes, sir.
I think I've been with him closer to 18 now. But
wow.
How I got the gig, I moved to Los Angeles in my early 20s and moved there to play with some other touring blues acts. And I was touring around with a guy named John Namath, who's a great singer, harmonica player. And at the time, he was living up in Oakland and I was in L.A., and I would travel up there to start tours with him. I played with him for about a year on and off. And he would use different bands. He didn't really have a set band.
Okay.
So he would use different Bay Area cats. And one of the guys he was using at the time, this drummer named June Corr, who's a you know, really well-known, amazing blues drummer. And he was, still is, with Charlie. He's been with Charlie for over 20 years. Wow. But we did a couple tours together, and we, you know, we're buds. And when Charlie's guitar player at the time gave his notice, June was nice enough just to recommend me. And I kind of got the word that Charlie was probably going to call and offer me some gigs. Wow. And that's how it happened. Cool. He just kind of called me on the phone and asked if I wanted to do some gigs. And we didn't do any rehearsals. He just sent me some songs. And then a few months later, I showed up for the first gig. And I've been with him ever since.
Man. Now, I know that you're still with him part-time, but what caused the slowdown or the stoppage of your touring with him for a while?
He made a couple records with Ben Harper and Ben Harper's mm-hmm. band. And on the second record with Ben, like a world tour was booked with Ben's band, you know, featuring Charlie as a guest for a full year. So basically at the end of, I think it was end of 2017, he let his band know, Charlie's band, that, you know, hey, next year I won't be doing any of my own gigs. I'll be out with Ben. And, you know, that's all I have ever really done for a job. So I had a couple months to figure out pretty quickly what I was going to do to stay afloat for a year without getting a job.
Yes, sir.
So I decided to put together a little trio. I was living in Boston at the time. So just a little blues trio, basically just to go out there and hustle, you know, $300, $400, $500 gigs and try to get as many per week as I could get. So we put the band together pretty quick and just went out there and started just booking restaurant gigs, parties, bars. And that's how GA20 originally started. And then within that year, we had written some songs, went into the studio, and it kind of progressed quickly. So I sent, I guess at the time it was an EP, but it turned into our first record, Lonely Soul. Sent it to a couple labels, and the first label I sent it to picked it up. That's Coal Mine Records. So then, you know, we kind of took a little bit more seriously and started getting on the road, got a booking agent, and have been touring, making records ever since.
That is so cool. Now, obviously, when you were touring with Charlie on a full-time basis, you had access to some blues icons like James Cotton, John Hammond, and others. You got to have a couple of favorite stories that you'd like to share, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I've been lucky to play with Cotton and Hammond and Billy Boy Arnold, a lot of great players, Jimmy Vaughn, stuff through the years. I've sat in with Charlie. I got one that comes to mind. I was playing in Chicago at Buddy Guy's venue, Legends, with Charlie. And midway through the set, this guy comes up onto the stage. It's a sold-out show. And he just walks up on stage, and I look over, and I see this guy getting on stage to the left side. And the bass player looks at him and doesn't do anything. I'm like, oh, that's weird. And he walks over to say something to Charlie, and Charlie didn't know who he was and started yelling at him. And went and pushed him, almost pushed him off the stage. And the guy goes, no, I'm the manager. Buddy Guy wants to sit in. So Charlie, and then anyway, Charlie, Charlie shook his hand, and then Buddy Guy came up, and I had to play guitar with Buddy Guy. So that was a good one. That's a good Charlie story.
Yeah, no kidding, man. Now. Yeah. Josh, Cody, I got to ask you guys, what's your background? I'm sure you've done some stuff previous to joining the band. Talk about a little bit of that. Josh, I want to start with you on this one.
Sure. I went to school for music, and when I got out, I moved to Boston and just kind of started working like immediately, like a lot, you know, in the club scene there. There's a lot of like singer-songwriter stuff. Playing at a lot of the clubs that both Matt and Cody have also kind of played in, just kind of coming up from the bottom. But again, a lot of singer-songwriter stuff, and that led to some recording work, a studio musician, and then that led to touring. And I mean, you name it, I've done it.
Cody, how about you, man?
You know, I went to music school in Boston for a short amount of time before I dropped out. And then, you know, I did the wedding band thing. I write my own tunes. And then, you know, I found myself in a similar circle as Josh, where there was a lot of session work. I play pedal steel guitar as well. So like a lot of Americana country session work and touring behind that. And yeah, just plugging away at the Boston scene and just picking up gigs and writing tunes and recording and all that stuff.
Cody and I worked together for like close to 7 years in a band that toured.
Oh, very nice.
Americana old school country. So again, you kind of go back to that start of American music, whatever classification you want to put it under, jazz, blues. If you go back far enough, there's a lot of crossover there. So for us to get the opportunity to work with Matt in GA20, it's been really a lot of fun and a lot, you know, it's been musically rewarding.
Yes. Now, Matt, I have to ask, and I'm doing this for the record because I snuck a peek while I was doing the prep for the show. Where did the band's name come from? GA20.
It's a old tweed guitar amplifier Gibson made. So GA stands for Gibson amplifier. Okay. And 20 is the size of the amp. There's all different GA Gibson amps, but the GA20 was made, this is really guitar nerd stuff, but from like 1949 to 1961 or two. And at the time when we started the band, we didn't have a name, and it's hard to come up with a name. Everything cool's already been taken. So
I don't know. I like GA20 personally.
All right, cool. Well, cool. We thought of one. And so anyway, that was the amp I was using. Still use it. Still record with it.
And Bonamassa's probably got a couple of those out in Nerdville somewhere.
I'm sure he's got a few thousand of them.
Yeah. He might have all of them.
Yeah, and I got like the four other ones that he doesn't have.
Yeah, he's got all the leftovers.
Now, I understand that Coal Mine Records brought you guys on board, and I did sneak a little bit of a listen into an interview that you did with Sean Bindley on Blues with a Feeling podcast out of Queensland, Australia.
Yeah, I was going to say Australia. That's right, I know Sean. Yeah.
Rumor has it there's at least one record company in Chicago that's kind of bummed that they didn't get on board with you, aren't they?
Alligator, but we ended up working with them.
Did you?
Yeah, so earlier in this interview, I said we sent it out to two labels. It was Coal Mine and it was Alligator. Mm-hmm. And Alligator turned it down, our first record. You know, Bruce has become a friend. I've known him for years through Charlie, the guy that runs Alligator. So he wrote back when I sent him the record initially and just said it was too distorted and too raw, or mostly distorted, I think was his words. And that was on a Friday. I remember I had a gig right here in Providence, and I was pretty bummed out. It was Coal Mine had not gotten back to me yet. They went out at the same time to both labels. And I was kind of bummed out. And so I was like, well, I just don't understand it. Like you're saying, it's kind of raw and distorted, but you started this label for Hound Dog Taylor, in my mind, is like one of the most raw, distorted sounding Chicago blues guys. I said, maybe just listen to it for the weekend and let me know if you change your mind. So he listened to it and still passed. And then he came and saw the band that year after the record came out. We were on tour in Chicago, and he came, checked out the band. I guess he liked it, because then I got an email the next week saying, oh, now I saw it live. I get it. Are you interested in making a record with us? It was like, or no, maybe he was like, now I get it. I like it. Let's talk. And then and then COVID happened. And during COVID, he reached out again, and he was like, so do you want to make a record with Alligator? Now that I've seen it, I understand, you know, the whole thing. And I was like, well, I'd love to work with you. I go, but, you know, we're with Coal Mine now, and this record came out. We have another record done. But I'd like to find a way to do something with Alligator, just it's such a historic blues, special Chicago blues label.
Sure.
So I kind of cooked up an idea, and I pitched him kind of just off the cuff. I'm like, well, next year is Hound Dog Taylor's 50th anniversary of his first record that Alligator started the label for. How about we do a tribute record for Hound Dog? GA20 does Hound Dog. Because we kind of got compared to Hound Dog a lot because of the instrumentation, two guitars, drums, yep, no bass. And he was like, well, that's interesting. I don't know how that would work because you're with Coal Mine. I'm like, well, why don't you both release it? Why don't you just do like a co-release? And I went and talked to the guy, Terry, who owns Coal Mine, and he loved the idea. So it just took some kind of, you know, figuring out how it was going to work for everybody. And
yeah,
I was able to talk everybody into it. So that's the Hound Dog record is technically Coal Mine, Karma Chief Coal Mine, it's the same thing, in partnership with Alligator. So it was like the two labels worked together to release that.
That's very cool.
But yeah, well, it was great working with Bruce.
According to your website, as well as in some interviews that I've heard and read, your band prides itself on using vintage instruments and amplifiers to produce that authentic sound that we all hear. You also favor traditional recording techniques, recording off the floor together in one room. Talk about how that method has lent itself to developing the sound that truly is unique to GA20.
Well, I mean, I think that technique and that sound of just playing live and recording a performance isn't unique to us. I mean, I think that's how the reason we did it was just that's because all the records I like, that's how it was recorded. So it seemed to make sense to approach it that way. I mean, it's mm-hmm. less forgiving. You know, if you mess up, you got to do the whole song over again for the most part. Why it's unique to GA20 is just because I think we're three dudes living now in 2025 making blues records that are influenced by the 50s and 60s and early 70s. Yes. But we're still ourselves, man. We all listen to other types of music and have other influences. So I'd like to think it's not a lot different than all those originators that did it. Like, they all had their own sound. You know, they're all playing traditional blues. So the Chicago guys are playing Chicago. But when any one of them come on, I know who it is right away, whether it's Buddy Guy or, you know, yep. they have their sound, you know?
Well, and I guess that's probably what I should have said, is the sound that you guys employ today is unique, because most bands don't go that direction. They all have a very clean sound.
Oh, yeah. And I would say, yeah, in this now putting out records, I would say there's only a few guys kind of making records like that. I agree.
Yeah. Yeah. And I have to tell you, I mean, you know, one of the cool parts of doing this program is that I do a lot of rabbit hole climbing. Mm-hmm. And I've been down the rabbit hole on Rory Gallagher, which led me to Taste. You know, I got into Butterfield, and that led me to Bloomfield. And, you know, I mean, I love that signature sound from back in the 60s and the early 70s. I really do. And that was one of the things that caught my attention when I heard the first album from you guys. And by the way, one of the things that I am very much about is supporting bands. So I don't just talk about it. I don't just stream. I would feel terrible if I did that. So I did go on your page and put an order in for some albums and stuff. I'm excited to get those. But I dig your sound, man. I really enjoy it. And I think one of the things that impressed me most is I realized that last year, two of your founding members moved on for whatever reason, resulting in the addition of Cody Nielsen on lead vocals and guitar and Josh on drums. And yet this doesn't seem to have slowed your progress down at all, has it?
No, only one founding member left. Pat, the singer, moved on. The other guy, the drummer, Tim, was not a founding member. No, it's okay. He was just a side man that was with us for a couple of records. But yeah, they both left last year, I guess. And lucky enough, you know, Cody was a good friend. Josh was a good friend. They were making some changes in their, you know, what they were doing career-wise. And it was really like things just aligned perfectly in more ways than one. Like, Cody lives 2 miles from me, which is like, if this was happening, I'm like, okay, GA20 is going to get a new singer. And you start going down the line of people I know just through the years of playing blues that would be a good fit. I think it comes down to like one or two people that came to mind when this was going to happen. And Cody was one of them. And it's just crazy because he lives down the street. You know what I mean? And Josh, same thing. He lives right here in Rhode Island. So it was really kind of just a perfect timing for everybody. And then we kind of just, we have a rehearsal space studio right here. And we just kind of locked ourselves up for a few months, worked on the set, worked on recording. We recorded an EP that's out now. We have another record coming out. So it was just everything lined up perfectly as just people's friends. We get along great. And then musically, it's a perfect fit. So yeah, I lucked out.
Well, and it seems like there's a really, really good chemistry between the three of you based on, you know, just listening to the music. It's very tight. And again, it's, you know, it's one of those things, like you said, if you screw up, you got to go back and redo it. And,
right. You
know, it's just an overall a good feel. But I wanted to ask Cody and Josh, and one at a time, whoever wants to start can start. What was it like when you got that call to work with Matt in GA20?
For me, like, you know, hanging out with Matt was always easy. So when I got the call to, hey, you want to come over and work on some tunes and, you know, play some guitars and listen to some records, the chemistry kind of was an instant thing. Like, you know, with GA20, because there's no bass player, like the guitars have to bob and weave in a certain way and kind of,
right.
It's a conversation between the two of us. And almost instantly, Matt and I's guitar playing was very complimentary of each other. So, you know, not only did it sound good, it was fun. And, you know, they worked together really well. So as far as I'm concerned, it was a pretty instant, like, connection that we had playing-wise.
Go ahead, Josh. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, it was, again, sort of a, it was a no-brainer, like being in the Boston music scene or Boston adjacent and kind of seeing what Matt had done with GA20, both as like creative vision and then also just, you know, sort of behind the scenes and running things, really, to watch it take off in such a short amount of time, especially coming out of COVID, out of the pandemic, to watch it just sort of take off. And, you know, you're keeping, you know, Boston is not a large music scene, unfortunately, anymore. And it's also, if you don't play hard rock or punk rock and hardcore, it's even a smaller pool, especially people that are touring not only regionally, but in, you know, nationally and internationally. So we're all aware of what's going on. So when he did approach me about, initially it was just to like cover a handful of gigs and I couldn't do it because I had some stuff on the table. And then it became a little bit more apparent that the need was there for someone to step in full time behind the drums. It was like, I started saying, so it was a no brainer. It was just like, yeah, I want in on that, you know. And I've known him for a very long time professionally. We had never worked together, but I've known him for a long time. We were in the same circles, you know, we'd see each mm-hmm. other at year-end parties, you know, whether it's like a recording studio Christmas party or an award show or something like that, we would somehow always end up hanging out together and having a good time. So when the opportunity was there to get in the van, it was a no-brainer. Just said, yeah, let's do it.
Very cool. Well, Matt, here you are 7 years into your journey as a band leader. You have amassed 3 number one Billboard chart toppers. You've won Best Blues Act 5 times by my count from the Boston Music Awards, collected multiple nominations from BMAs, Blues Blast Awards, New England Blues Awards, and you're absolutely kicking ass when it comes to the world of streaming, both at home and as well as abroad. To what do you attribute the explosive growth of this band? Because I don't know of many bands that have done this well, even in 3 or 4 times this amount of time.
I think it's a mix. The biggest thing is we have a really good team. It's small, but it's everybody is really good at what they do. Coal mm-hmm. Mine has been a huge part of all of that. And then through Coal Mine, well, actually, I should pause. Coal Mine and our booking agent, Michael Morris, he came on board about a year into the band, or actually right around COVID is when we started working with Michael. And between Michael and Coal Mine, I would say those are the 2 biggest partners we have. And then the next layer of that is our publicist team or publicity team that we get through Coal Mine. And they've been really good. So it's like a combo of all that stuff. And then just putting out records and working hard, we're willing to travel and tour a lot. And I think a lot of bands want to do it and can't afford it. You got to kind of have a, you know, an idea of how it works, because you can go out once or twice and lose a lot of money, and then it's hard to keep that going. So that's part of it too, being able to stay on the road. A lot of it comes down to music business, you know, just like kind of running things and just like any other business. And a lot of times I think startup bands come out of the gate, they might have a pretty good record, but if you're not really on top of your business, it's hard to kind of get over that hump to being like going out once or twice a year and losing a pile of money, then going to have to work a day job to save up again, versus being full-time musicians, making a living and still growing, you know what I mean? Staying out there.
Right. Yep. Now, from the looks of it, your touring schedule is quite full into the end of 2025, and you have a new 3-song EP that you referred to keep things fresh. You also just mentioned that you're coming out with an album soon. Let's hear some details on that. And when are you coming to Michigan? We got to get you here, man.
Yeah, I mean, the closest we're coming to Michigan, I think, is next week. We'll be in Toledo.
I know.
But you know, hopefully soon. Like I said, Michael's our booking agent. He does a great job. So I'm sure we'll get there probably next year, 2026. Last time I played there, I think it was played Detroit, and then I think it's a suburb of Detroit. What's that other venue everyone always
talking about? The Token?
No, it wasn't the Token. It was something I played with. It was a double bill with JD Simon.
Is it the Ark in Ann Arbor?
No, we can do this all day. I'm not going to remember it. But, but there was, anyway, we'll, hopefully 2026, we'll be back in Michigan.
Well, listen, I'll tell you what, I am referring you to everybody that I know with a venue, and I've got a few people that I talk to regularly, got a few blues festival organizers that have been been in their ear, and I absolutely got to see you guys up here. I mean, it's a lot of fun. If I wasn't booked when you guys are in Toledo, I would be there 100%, no doubt.
Right on.
But listen, we got to wrap up here. Got to get to the important stuff. Where can we send folks to learn more about GA20, maybe pick up some CDs and vinyl or other fun merch, or book you for a gig?
The easiest place would be our website, GA20band.com. Has everything there.
Short, sweet, and to the point, right?
Yeah.
Well, Matthew Stubbs, Cody Nielsen, Josh Kagans, don't leave till I get done. I just can't tell you how much I appreciate you guys being here for the visit today. I wish you and your bandmates all of the best and safe travels. And when you do make it into Michigan, let me know, and I will make sure to make a point of coming out to support you. And also when the new album comes out, too, you're welcome to come back on and talk about that.
All right, Jim. Thanks, man.
Thank you, Jim.
All right. That wraps up this edition of Time Signatures. Once again, my thanks to the band GA20, Matthew Stubbs, Cody Nielsen, Josh Kagans, but also to you, for without you, none of this would be possible. Jim Irvin reminding you, keeping the blues alive is everyone's responsibility, but preserving the history of the blues one story at a time, that's my mission. Until next time, so long, everybody.
This has been Time Signatures with Jim Irvin, presented by the Capital Area Blues Society in Lansing, Michigan. For more information on cabs, visit capitalareablues.org. You can find this episode and past episodes at lccconnect.org. The Time Signatures theme song, Michigan Roads, is used by permission and was written by Root Doctor, featuring Freddie Cunningham.
You know I'm crying, crying, baby, driving up in
Until next time, keep on keeping the blues alive.
Baby, I'm home.